VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 532, recorded on March 11th, 2019.
Welcome to the 532nd edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 365th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Dunzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
Right. There's a lot of stuff going on, and I'm wondering, are you interested in Sekiro Shadows Die Twice? It's coming out soon.
Of course.
Have you played Devil May Cry? There's a lot of stuff coming out that I didn't know was coming out.
Devil May Cry 5 is one of those things I'm going to wait on and pick it up cheaper later.
Really?
Yeah, people are posting too many spoilers on it right now. It's kind of taking the fun out of me.
Okay. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that I didn't know was coming out. It's coming out. Like, I didn't know Final Fantasy VII was coming out for Switch and Xbox One, let alone Final Fantasy X and X-2. I knew that Final Fantasy XII was coming out, but those games are coming out. Paul keeps on telling me that Final Fantasy X was the last good Final Fantasy.
Paul's wrong.
Yeah, Final Fantasy IX was the last good one.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
Titus is literally the most annoying character ever made.
Yes, very annoying. And that scene where they're both trying to laugh is the most scariest, forced, faked thing ever.
Well, that's a reason to actually play it, though, isn't it?
Yeah. I guess so, to laugh at it, sure.
I mean, they have Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney Trilogy coming out for the consoles. It's like, you know, everything's just coming out. And it's like stuff that I didn't even know was coming out.
Yeah, there's some good games coming out, looking forward to.
I pricked up Scott's ears when I gave him the release date for Dragon Quest Builders 2.
Yes, looking forward to that in July. Also waiting for Tunic to get a release date. Should be coming out this year, hopefully. What else is coming out this year?
Well,
there's a lot of Switch games, so the Switch is like becoming my fast favorite console.
Until it gets broken, then you're up Schitt's Creek. Because you won't have save games unless you subscribe to their $20 service. And it costs $120 to repair when you're out of a warranty.
Yeah, that's terrible.
I'm really excited to try playing Phoenix Wright again. It's been such a long time, and I really enjoy that series.
Yeah. Well, you know, Earth Defense Force is coming out. I know you're excited about that.
I didn't even know that there was an Earth Defense Force, a new one coming out, until I saw a PAX East invite to play it.
Yeah, I mean, I got a PAX East invite to play it, too. It's like, I just need a place to stay. Are you actually going?
No, I'm not going to PAX East.
Okay, I needed someone to crash with.
It's all the way up in Boston. I can't go all the way from Boston. And the only thing I would really want to do there is play Samurai Showdown, and that's just not enough for me to...
Yeah, we were discussing that earlier. I was wondering what you thought about the remastered Samurai Showdown coming for all consoles.
I think it is to Samurai Showdown what Street Fighter 4 was to Street Fighter.
Okay.
It looks good. It looks stylish. It looks fun. It's taken everything back to, like, the first one, but with, like, all the stylized 2.5D graphics, and I like it. It's really cool.
But have you been playing Toe Jam and Earl is the question.
Dang. I have not gotten there. Although my brother was super interested in that and jumped on it right away, and he's been having a good time with it.
Yeah, I mean, I saw the reviews for it. It's sort of like the game looks great and sounds great, but the gameplay is janky. You know, I don't think people Toe Jam and Earl fans probably won't care because that was basically the original game anyway.
Yeah, Toe Jam and Earl has always been janky, so it's not different.
One game that I intend to play soon is Trials Rising, because I'm hearing rave reviews for it. They're calling it the best Trials of all, because they successfully have a great a tutorial mode, which is videos, but it's by one of the best Trials players, and they show you exactly what to do to get maximum, you know, time out of it, or minimum time, really. So it's like, you know, you'd expect a game like this to just get more and more humdrum as it goes along, but no, Trials of Rising takes everything great about Trials and tosses out everything bad about it, you know? So apparently, if you want to get into Trials, this is the game to get. I sound like a commercial, I know.
People that are into Trials are really, really into Trials, and I've really never seen the appeal myself, although those games, like, people really dig them.
Well, did you ever play Excitebike?
Excitebike is fine, but
that's what Trials is, basically.
Yeah, but I mostly like it for the theme songs.
Yeah. One thing we're not going to talk about, but we should talk about here before we actually go into the news, is the new Doom trailer has been getting ripped a new one.
God, it's awful.
And even Bethesda said, we're not involved with this movie.
It's like, this would only be acceptable if it was from the makers of Starship Troopers and being made and being put out in 1998, a year after Starship Troopers. It does not look like a 2019 movie. It looks like one of my buddies said it looks like a fan film, but I've seen fan films that have a little bit more production quality in them.
How does this game get made more than once? I don't know.
What do you mean film? It's not the Doom game.
How does the Doom game get made into a movie more than once is what I meant. Sorry.
Yeah, the first time it had The Rock. It doesn't even have that this time. It's like, this one's headed straight for Redbox.
Ugh.
Who knows? Maybe it'll be direct to Netflix. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on we're not going to get into. But we will get into what you've been playing, Scott.
I've been playing Braveland Trilogy, and that is a strategy turn-based game where you have three different characters to choose from, and it's basically three games bundled into one for the Switch. And you recruit men into your squad, and then you can switch out which soldiers you want to use.
Yeah, well, and it came out 5 years ago on Steam. I mean, the game,
yeah.
So.
I didn't realize that at the time, but it works okay for the Switch. I like it on there. It has nice graphics, and I wish it had more variety of music. It only has like one or two tracks, like two tracks, and
the graphics sort of remind me of like Heroes of Might and Magic 2. You know, it's like primitive, cartoony, and bright, but not bad. You know, but it does look like it looks like a 2014 game, right? But it has the same feel as a Heroes of Might and Magic 2, in which, you know, it's very cartoonish graphics that are very, you know, on the nose, like here's a, you know, it's like, but on the other hand, it's also bright and colorful as well.
Yeah. It's a little slow at first because it's, you know, you have the tutorial phase. But I think it gets a little bit better along the way, and it's a pretty quick game. I think you could beat probably each chapter in about 5 hours, maybe less.
Yeah, you can get the Braveland Trilogy on Steam right now for $15, so it's, or just the first one for $5. So it's not like, you know, it's going to break your bank. You should try it. I mean, if you really like Heroes of Might and Magic, and I'm not talking to you, Scott, because you've been playing it. You know, if you like Heroes of Might and Magic, this is basically the closest you're going to come to the old Heroes of Might and Magic. It's basic turn-based battles, you know. It's on a hex grid, just like Heroes of Might and Magic.
Yeah, I remember playing that, liking that game. I think there's more strategy and depth in the Heroes of Might and Magic. But this one was good. Like I said, you level up your character, you get money to buy equipment and more men into your squad. And there's no random battles, so that's always nice. It was a fun game.
How about you, TJ? What have you been playing?
Well, I got a new laptop recently. I finally swapped out my old one that I've been working on for, let's see, 6 or 7 years.
By the way, everybody, if you're wondering why he sounds like he's in a cardboard box, he hasn't gotten the right drivers yet.
my Razer headset is a little hard to calibrate if I don't do it properly right from the get-go.
Why don't you just use the laptop mic like I'm going right now?
Because the laptop mic is garbage. I already tested it.
Yeah, but I'd rather have that than nothing.
Well, I mean, you have this. This is better than nothing,
I guess.
In any case, so I kind of went back into my library to see if there were what I would test with this, and I could never run XCOM 2 at top settings, so I gave that a go. And yeah, it's I've been re-exploring that little game a little bit. I never got the DLC, so it's kind of it's kind of interesting to go back to that and just like see what I missed.
I don't know. It's like I'm actually saving up. I got a cheap Lenovo just to get by with this because of my. But I'm saving up to get a nice PC. But you know, here's the thing: I don't really need a really high end graphic card. You know, something like a 1050 will do. You know, something that's nice and inexpensive. Where I'm going to go hard is like at least 16 megabytes of RAM, gigabytes of RAM. I'm actually looking at a 1 terabyte solid state drive with a 2 or 3 mechanical or hard drive, you know, as a data drive.
Mm-hmm.
So you get that ultra fast speed, but, you know, you also get the space. I mean, the solid state drives are going down in price now.
Yeah, they are. I got a decent, solid state drive on my old one, but I also got a decent solid state drive on this one and a mechanical one as well. 16 gigabytes RAM, so it can crank it out pretty good.
On your laptop? So you got a gaming laptop. Okay.
Yeah, I got an Alienware. It's a 17R5.
I'm going back and forth on, you know, I got this cheap laptop, so I probably will get a desktop next.
I'm not going to be able to take this. I'm going to have to figure out a better bag situation because this thing is massive. Like, it's about a third bigger than
my laptop. It can't be that massive. Come on.
I mean, it's a good, like, probably 30, maybe 25 inches long by about.
You're talking about 25 inches long, or are you talking about the screen size?
I'm talking about the thing itself, like.
That's testing what a laptop is. I mean, my regular monitor, I think I just got a cheap 25-inch, what's it called, screen.
It's pretty big. I don't have a ruler here to mess with it, but it's not going to fit in my backpack. That's why I'm going to have to figure out a better bag situation.
Oh, my bag is pretty huge. My old laptop bag. I'm not taking this laptop anywhere, so I don't really use it, but it's huge. One of the things about the Targus, is I remember being in one of those rainstorms in which I just got soaked to the bone. You know those kind of rainstorms in which you're just drenched? It doesn't matter what you're wearing. You're just wet from head to toe, and it gets inside your, you know, your underwear. You know, it's that kind of thunderstorm. But when I pulled my laptop out, thinking it was going to be, you know, it was going to be wet. No, it was bone dry. And this is about as hard as a thunderstorm could get, which is why I'm basically, you know, a believer now. I'm stuck with that brand loyalty now because I thought my laptop was going to be finished, but it was actually bone dry.
Yeah, I'm the same way with the Alien, whereas I had my last one for like 7 years and it still was running games at like at the very least medium settings pretty well all the way up until very recently. Like I was able to run Fortnite when it first came out last year on medium settings, and like that was a 6-year-old laptop. So I was pretty okay with moving up to another Alienware and just
afford it. I mean,
Yeah, and at this point, it's for my job. So, A, I can afford it. B, it's for my work. And C, I can write it off on taxes.
Lucky you. So let's hear your opinion on Two Worlds 3.
Which one?
Two Worlds 3.
Two Worlds 3? What is that?
Well, it's the sequel to Two Worlds 2, which is the sequel to Two Worlds.
I need to Google this.
me and Scott were discussing it earlier.
I think it gets a bad rap.
Bad rap that Two Worlds got. It's like, Two Worlds 3 is coming out someday.
It has a hot chick on the cover. What could go wrong?
I guess. So what do you think of RPG Maker coming to consoles now?
I think that sounds cumbersome. RPG Maker is like a little bit hard to handle already. And so the idea of taking that and putting it on a like PS4 controller sounds like something that would make me pull my hair out.
Well, it's also coming to Switch. So imagine trying to do that with a Joy-Con.
It's only good if you can share your worlds or your games with people. If you can't, that makes it kind of pointless.
Imagine, like, PS4 and Switch allow for, like, mini SD cards. I imagine you would be able to put your creations on those cards and move them around.
Oh, I'm pretty sure they're going to have a server for the console so that you can just share them freely. And I'm willing to bet you that, considering it's RPG Maker, the format in which the save files will be in, you can play it on any console. You know, it's like if you make it on the Switch, you can play it on the Xbox One. I mean, RPG Maker, you know, it isn't exactly high tech.
No, it's not. It doesn't take a lot to put that.
Let me rephrase that. The editor itself is high tech, but the games it makes are not.
Yeah.
It's all creativity going into it. It's not like you're putting graphically intensive, things that are going to push your machine to the limit on there.
Yeah, it's more about the story that people come up with.
Well, here's a question for you. Last game we're going to discuss, and then we're going to get into news, I promise. What do you think of the fact that Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3 is coming out on Switch?
I thought that was ballsy. I didn't think that the Switch could handle like a new Marvel Ultimate Alliance, but they're going for it.
Having Marvel Ultimate Alliance, though. Because here's really the thing, you know, we have all this legal shit right now with all the Marvel characters. It's going to be interesting to see who appears in it. Because at least in the first two Marvel Ultimate Alliances, you could get anybody on it. You know, you could have Spider-Man with Fantastic Four, with Thor, whatever, you know. But right now, it'll be interesting to see who's going to be in the roster. Because we saw what happened at Capcom versus Marvel, you know. Half the roster was gone because of the Fantastic Four and X-Men being on Disney's shit list.
Yeah, you can't afford to not have the X-Men in there. That's like half the fun, is putting all the different kinds of teams together, like putting the X-Men with the Fantastic Four, putting like the Avengers with the X-Men, everything in between. Putting the solos that would never work with anyone else with anyone else.
Anyway, we're gonna go right into news. Halo the Master Chief Collection on PC may have just been leaked by Microsoft, and this comes to us from TechRadar. It looks increasingly likely that we'll be seeing the PC release of Halo the Master Chief Collection in the very near future, with Microsoft seemingly spoiling its own surprise by listing the collection of remastered Halo games on the official Microsoft Store as a Surface Hub title. Previously, Halo the Master Chief Collection was listed on the Microsoft Store as an Xbox only, but now it states it's also available on Hub. This hints that the gamers are compatible with a Surface Hub, which is an interactive touchscreen whiteboard Microsoft designed for classrooms. That seems like an odd product to play Halo on, so it could be an error. However, the Surface Hub runs Windows 10, so it could be another hint that a version of Halo the Master Chief Collection is in the works for Windows PCs. There have been several rumors about Halo the Master Chief Collection coming to PC, with Brad Sims, a writer for ThorUp.com who specializes in Microsoft rumors, suggesting in a video that we'll be seeing the game on PC immediately. Just so you know, it's a lot of people are considering it Microsoft's worst-kept secret right now. The Master Chief Collection was released back in November 11th, 2014 for Xbox One and includes Halo 1, Halo 2, Halo 3, Halo 4. Halo ODST was released later on because people wanted to do Firefight. And while the collection offered plenty of value for the money, there was controversy over a number of technical problems and bugs, mainly affecting the multiplayer parts of the game, which is what everybody really cared about, because Halo 2 multiplayer is considered the pinnacle of shooter multiplayer lobbies. You know, there was, and what shocks me is that no one's really copied what Halo 2 did, you know? With many of those issues seemingly addressed, many players would like to see Halo return to PC, where they can play it with a keyboard and mouse, arguably the way the series was meant to be played. And one other thing that the article does not mention is that it seems that Halo Reach will be included with it as well, even though it doesn't have Master Chief in it. Oh, it does. The brief cameo at the very end, if you push the joystick over to the right.
Yeah, this is interesting. Like, if they're really going to put all that back on PC, I imagine that a lot of people will go back to give that a try again. Like, especially if they give it just like a little bit of an HD smooth out.
Remember a few years ago, the original Xbox Live was being held open because there was a small group of people who were still playing Halo 2 multiplayer on it. And they had to wait until there was one person left before they said, okay, that's it. We're closing it now.
Two people is too many. We can't stop.
I mean, Halo 2 is considered by many Halo players and a lot of shooter players as one of the best multiplayer experiences. People were addicted to that.
There's a game that's come out that's been in development recently called... what is it called? Splitgate Arena Warfare. And basically what it is it blends Halo with portal mechanics where you can shoot portals into walls and then come out of different walls and use the momentum from the areas to go through. And it's kind of cool. It's interesting how they blend that sort of Halo gunplay with the portal mechanics. Like, I've talked to the guy several times, and just like every time he gives me a physics lesson on how they manage to balance the movement and momentum.
Or you could just play Master Chief in Jump Force now. It's a mod that allows you to play as him, and it's definitely unchief-like. But yeah, I mean, I here's the thing. It's probably going to be Xbox Anywhere, so if anybody bought the game digitally, it'll probably have it on their PCs automatically, on their Windows 10 PCs.
Yeah, I can imagine that.
And here's the... Well, before we go on, here's the question. I wonder if they're going to implement a keyboard and mouse for the Xbox version so that you can have cross-play.
I'm sure there's some people that would enjoy that.
DJ?
I'm interested in going back and giving Reach another go. That was probably my favorite story that was told out of that series.
Spoiler, everybody dies.
Yeah.
Almost everybody. June survives.
But it was a good one. Like, it was really it was really a good one, and I would go back and give that another go.
Well, did you enjoy the very last mission?
Yeah.
You know, and it's like... My favorite thing is if you look at the objectives, it's just one word, survive. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people who could just stick it out there for hours on end, you know. I didn't. I'd fight a little bit and then just let them kill me because it's like, I just want to see the ending, damn it. Yeah. I mean, it was a great love letter, and they actually put a little heart on the end when you see the Pillar of Autumn going towards Halo. You know, mm-hmm. It was a nice little love letter to Halo fans. And it makes me wonder, what's going to happen with Bungie once their contract is over and they can stop making shitty Destiny games for Activision and just, you know, maybe Microsoft goes up there and say, hey, you know, 343 Industries is nice, but how would you like to make Halo 7?
Well, I mean, they're probably going to continue making Destiny games because they broke free from Activision and now they own the Destiny license and can do what they please with it.
Well, they'll call it Halo Destiny.
Maybe. But I think they actually might stretch their legs and see what they can do now that they're not under Activision's thumb with it.
Well, if they're going to do that, just remake Oni, damn it.
Oni?
Yeah, hell yeah. Something wrong with Oni? I like that game. I liked it better with it when I was playing with God mode because it was incredibly hard, but I still enjoyed it.
I'm interested to see what would happen if Bungie actually stretched its legs and did what it wanted with Destiny instead of having to do what Activision was telling it to do all the time.
Well, here's the thing. You know what recently became backwards compatible on Xbox? Marathon Girondel. So I'm wondering, you know, if Bungie's free, I wonder if they're going to start making Marathon games again. Think about that while we move on to the next... What?
The first thing I would expect them to do, an actual Bungie Destiny and not an
actual... Oh, just let Bungie die, damn it. Just let it die. I mean, not Bungie, I mean, just let Destiny die. We don't need any more Destiny.
I don't know. I mean, for as much effort as they've put into that game, they might as well see what they can do with it.
We're thinking... You know what the sunken ship fallacy is, right?
Yeah, but at the same time, I also think that there's opportunity there when somebody isn't pretty much telling you, make microtransactions.
I would just say, okay, we'll leave it alone for 10 years and come back when people are excited because they forgot what the first two Destinies were like, and then we can make the Destiny that actually is what Destiny's supposed to be. In the meantime, let's make some Marathon or Halo or Oni. Just let Destiny – leave it alone, you know? Just let it die. You can resurrect it later. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
Microsoft Xbox One all digital edition leaked from GeekWire. Credible rumors have been spreading for months that Microsoft has been working on a new digital media-only edition of its Xbox One game console without a disk drive. This past week, Windows Central reported that the project, codenamed Maverick, may be in stores as soon as this coming May, calling it there's going to be a second version called Goose. As the Xbox One S All Digital Edition, the new Xbox would be entirely reliant upon internet access and digital licenses for its software, which would further incentivize customers to subscribe to Microsoft services such as its Game Pass. This is in addition to the second rumored Microsoft project, Scarlet Cloud, which is designed to work with Microsoft's planned game service. This marks another step towards Microsoft's continued embrace of the concept of its video game division as a service provider, alongside subscription services such as Xbox All Access. That, in turn, seems to paint a picture of Microsoft's current console strategy as working to disrupt the market entirely, rather than focus on the more traditional route, focusing heavily on must-have games that are exclusive to their platform, thus giving a consumer several specific reasons to own an Xbox over a Switch or a PS4, Microsoft has been steadily chipping away at several of the accepted pretexts of what a video game console actually is. This has the potential to trigger a lot of knock-on effects. Between the current age of individual games becoming service platforms all by themselves, such as Fortnite or Warframe, and the continuing rise in popularity of digital media across all platforms, physical media has consistently made up less of a share of gaming revenue over the last couple of years. Reliable market statistics for video game sales are notoriously hard to come by, since companies rarely divulge their internal data, but when they do, there's a distinct trending towards digital sales matching or exceeding physical media. While overall revenues would have never have been healthier, major brick-and-mortar retailers like GameStop are posting up significant losses. The original start of the movement towards downloadable content, DLC, and the console market was due to companies like GameStop in the first place, who realized record profits in 1990s and 2000s by capitalizing on the used games market. Since DLC can't be traded for in-store credit or lent to a friend, it became industry standard to practice... It became industry standard practice to include at least some cosmetic extras as a digital bonus for a physical disc, because that way a company is at least making some money off of the sale of a used game. With a digital-only Xbox, which is rumored to be shipping at a significantly cheaper retail price than the current Xbox One S, Microsoft is moving towards bringing a brand new audience, all of which is paying Microsoft directly. It also puts Microsoft in a role more akin to Netflix or Hulu than a traditional video game manufacturer, complete with a rotating month-by-month lineup via its Game Pass. In the American market, the evolving debate over net neutrality could play a role, as many modern video games clock in at a few dozen gigabytes of data, and rural customers who already struggle with broadband access won't find anything exciting about a digital-only Xbox. As the market continues to evolve towards a greater acceptance of games as a service, however, it may be a solid bet to have a console platform that's pre-positioned as a cheap method of entry for those services.
I can tell you, one of the inspirations for this is the Google Chrome, which is extremely inexpensive, but it doesn't have a drive, and it's all online. And Microsoft is still kicking itself in the, for not, having the Surface Pro do the same thing. Basically, the Google Chrome came in and ate its lunch. You know, and here's the thing. You can get an Xbox One S 1 terabyte for $200 at Walmart. So something much less, if you take away the drive and just make it an internet-only thing, you could probably sell it for like $125, maybe even $100, just to have digital software. And I must admit, the only physical software I've been using lately has been Gamefly stuff, Otherwise, it's a lot easier for me just to buy it digitally and not have to worry about popping in a disc.
Yeah. They do have a point, though, about like...
Well, yeah, I mean, that's not why it's going to replace the Xbox SKU. It's going to be sort of like, here's a cheaper version for those of you who can do digital only.
Sure. It's just interesting to think about, because this was also an issue when everybody heard that Fallout 76 was going to be online only, is that, like, most of the people in West Virginia can't play the game that's set in West Virginia.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. When they say digital, they mean digital distribution. So there's probably going to be two things at work here. One, it'll probably have a 1 terabyte or larger hard drive, so you can just download the games that you want. But for those who can do the broadband thing, it could be that they could also include a streaming service in addition to that. So the games that you really like, you keep on your hard drive, and the ones you just want to try out and maybe try on Xbox Live Game Pass, you can just stream it. And for those people who are in areas in which you have, good internet, it's, doing that for $60 a year, that's a win-win situation,
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, Microsoft saw what the Google Chrome did, and they said, we're not going to let this happen at consoles. We're going to be in it first. And here's the other thing, what they're basically doing is making the console itself less important, because if you play via streaming, really graphic intensive games on your Switch that are owned by Microsoft, you're basically saying, well, the console is not important. It's the games that are important. And if you're buying our service, it's a win for us, even if you bought someone else's console.
The console just needs to be an adequate box in order to deliver those services.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. Remember back in 2013, Microsoft got a lot of shit because it was hinted that the Xbox One would just be online only. So right now, they're doing what they should have done back then, and that is, well, we have this version, which is not online only, but we also have this version, which will be online only, but the best part is that you'll be paying less for it because it has less components to it.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, John Matrick was in charge of Microsoft, and he wanted everybody to have a Kinect, which added $100 to the price of the Xbox One. I'm not going to bash the Kinect because I love the Kinect, but, it did turn off a lot of people to have to spend that much just for a console.
Yeah. I mean, like, you had to buy the Xbox that had the automatic little eye in it that was always on for a while.
Yeah. And, here's the thing. It's a very interesting timing for this because if they're going to release it in May, that's a year before – that's a month before E3. And I just wonder why they would do it before E3. I mean, can you imagine doing it at E3, say, we have this special new Xbox One S, only costs $125, and by the way, you can buy it tomorrow, It's just strange timing if it actually is going to be in May. Scott?
Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, I guess I still like physical media. Just like I guess maybe that's nostalgia, you know, speaking there. Opening a box and seeing a nice manual and maybe a map, because if it's an RPG, and you know, just having a cartridge thing, like, just because I got this Nintendo Zelda encyclopedia that looked like the old Nintendo cartridge, and it came in a sleeve and it was really cool. And so there is that aspect, but I think now we're moving into a generation that's been digital only. And
I can't remember the last time I bought a physical PC game.
Right. And, you know, I still have, you know, a couple of physical Switch games, and it does feel really disappointing to open a box and you just have this tiny little cartridge, and it's like, well, what's the point? I should just get this digitally and, you know, not have to worry about popping the cartridge in or out, or popping in the CD out, or worrying about if I lose it or if it gets damaged. And so there's a lot to be said for having a service like this, where you could say you buy a game from Microsoft and then Microsoft now can link that game to your account. So if you had to get a new console, you'd already have your game.
Hell, here's the thing, Scott, here's the thing. If Microsoft said, well, if you buy Xbox Game Pass for $60 for an entire year that you can play on your Switch, would you? You know, you might.
It sounds like a good service, but I don't know that I myself is going to get Xbox. I just, you know, there are games that I want that I'll just play on PC or on the PlayStation, and now the Switch. So
there's it. Microsoft's also wrapping up all the PC. One thing we did not talk about is there's a strong rumor, they say it's a done deal, that Microsoft bought Relic Entertainment. Or is about to buy Relic Entertainment. For those of you who don't know, those are the people who did Dawn of War and Company of Heroes. And not coincidentally, they're also working on right now Age of Empires 4 for Microsoft. And Microsoft is buying up all these companies who, I must stress, are PC developers. Obsidian and Exile.
Yeah. But it doesn't mean, I mean, they're still going to have games on PC, and I'd rather use a keyboard and have a mouse and have access to files and be able to do stuff. Console is kind of locked in. You can't really mess with it.
Of course, the funny thing is that we're seeing a lot of PC strategy games. I mean, Stellaris was just released on console.
Mm-hmm.
I know that TJ's a big fan of the game. You know, it's about as PC a game as you can get.
I was just looking at some of their games, and they did Homeworld. I love Homeworld.
Yeah, they were commissioned to do the Homeworld remake when it was bought by, I think it was Gearbox. I remember someone bought the license for Homeworld, and they said, here, Relic, you take it. So I don't think a Homeworld was originally the original Homeworld was a Relic Entertainment game.
Mm-hmm.
I can always check, I mean, but I think it was someone else. Oh, no, the original Homeworld was Relic. Wow, okay.
Yes. And I don't think they did the new one where it was like on the desert planet, but yeah.
No, that was actually a strange spinoff. It was actually a different game, but when Gearbox, I think it was, got the license, they said, screw it, let's just slap the name Homeworld on it. Sort of like that Cloverfield movie. The Cloverfield Experiment. It wasn't a Cloverfield movie, but then they decided to just put some references to Cloverfield and then have a gigantic monster at the end that makes no sense. But yeah, I mean, what if Microsoft says, you know, after you do Age of Empires 4, why don't you make another Homeworld for us?
Yeah. I like if those are the games they make, then yes, I like Relic.
Here's my point, is that Microsoft's buying all of these companies. Well, they also did Impossible Creatures too. They're buying all these companies who are PC developers. You know, I mean, the number of games they made for console you can count on one hand. I mean, they did The Outfit, which was a 360 game, and that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it, actually. They did one game for console. So, but here's my point, though. Microsoft is, you know, the PC platform, it's almost unheard of to buy, you know, digital software. I mean, the last one I got that it was actually physical was Total War Warhammer, and before that, Pillars of Eternity. And each time, you basically put in the disc for it to say, okay, now log into Steam and we'll download the game from there.
Yeah, that's what happened with Skyrim. I got Skyrim home, and they were like, okay, you got the game, download it on Steam. And it did, and that's what happened with Pillars. And it is nice not to have to put in the disc every time you want to play a specific game. You could just go to your digital browser and just play it, and they're all right there, and it does make it a lot easier.
So what Microsoft's doing right this time is that they're not forcing people. It's basically they're giving them an option. You know what? We're going to release the Xbox One S, and it's going to be $100 cheaper, you know, dirt cheap. And really, to sell a console, it's all about the price, you know.
Come and try our adequate box.
And here's the thing, you know, the next Xbox and hopefully the next the PS5, they're going to be 100% backwards compatible to everything you already have in your system. If they're, I know Microsoft is. If Sony doesn't do it, they're going to be looked at as dullards. Or they have to do. There's no way they can't do it. You know, they can't even do the. Well, you can buy it again. You can buy the port. No, Sony, you're not going to be able to do that. You're going to have people who want to put their old discs in and have it run. So
yeah.
And we talked about this last week. You know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with the next Switch, because there's definitely going to be one, a new Switch going to be announced in 2 years, right? The Switch 2, whatever they're going to end up calling it. And if Nintendo decides to pull that shit, you know, oh, you just have to buy it over again. I think people will riot.
Yeah. I really do think Nintendo needs to start looking into saying, okay, this person has bought Zelda, you know, how many times? Come on.
We'll ask Paul. I think Paul said 6 or 7.
It's like, it just really, I don't know. It's just like there are companies that are willing to, you know, say, hey, you bought this physically, you can have it digitally, you know. It's just after a certain amount of times, you know.
Well, I mean, like, I bought Zelda Link's Awakening, and then I bought Zelda Link's Awakening DX, and then I bought Zelda Link's Awakening in the virtual console shop. I'm ready to buy it again.
It's going to come to Switch.
I know, and I'm ready for it.
Me too. I'm looking forward to that.
I'm ready for a little clay bean Link. He looks like a little beanie baby, and I love it.
You know, Dragon Quest 11 is coming to Switch as well. Dragon Quest 11S.
Yeah.
Anyways, so is Animal Crossing. Are you going to buy Animal Crossing?
I think I will.
Did they actually finally announce a new Animal Crossing, or are they still just teasing?
They did announce it.
It's been announced, so there's no confirmed date.
Huh.
Well, there's also like Gears 5 coming sometime soon, too.
Yeah, Gears 5 is... I feel like it's... People have been saying it's coming real close.
But, you know, it doesn't matter because all of them will be outshone by Two Worlds 3. That game's going to revolutionize RPGs as we know it.
That'll be interesting if true.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. I'll take this. Government official wonders how Steam can, quote-unquote, get away with this kind of stupidity, unquote, after a rape game is removed. And this comes from some PC Gamer. So just so people know, we actually briefly discussed Rape Day last week. But we really didn't get into it. All we knew was that Steam was doing nothing about it. Well, apparently they did remove it. So at least for a couple of weeks, there's an intentionally noxious game called Rape Day, which promised players the opportunity to, quote-unquote, verbally harass, kill, and rape women, was listed as Steam as it awaited approval to be sold on the platform. After widespread criticism of the listing earlier this week, Valve announced it would not host the game due to, quote-unquote, unknown costs and risks it posed and removed the Steam page. Here's the thing about that. They were perfectly willing to let it go, except for the fact that people had the audacity to complain about it.
Yeah, they only realized their mistake after, like, thousands of people said, what are you freaking doing? Are you serious? And then they realized, oh, well, maybe we shouldn't publish a game called Rape Day.
It's ridiculous. It really is. I mean,
according to Games Industry Bit, is a Scottish National Party MP, Hannah Bardell, released a statement today calling for the government review of Steam and other platforms. Quote unquote, the culture to seek forgiveness rather than permission is a stain on an industry that otherwise has the potential to be a real force for good, she said of Valve, requesting a quote-unquote full review of how tech companies and gaming platforms, specifically Steam, are able to get away with this kind of stupidity. The pornography business is new legal and ethical territory for Valve, which only approved its first explicit uncensored game on Steam in September of last year, but this is not the first time it's been called out on ethical grounds for the content of adult games it distributes. In a 2017 interview with PC Gamer, Mark Antoon, the president of adult gaming site Nutaku, that name, just Nutaku, who came first, Kotaku or Nutaku? they criticized Valve for allowing a depiction of non-consensual sex on Steam. Valve has no specific policy which disallows games that glorify or encourage players to commit acts of sexual violence, only barring, quote-unquote, content that violates the laws of any jurisdiction in which it will be available and, quote-unquote, content that exploits children in any way. Okay, so just stopping there. So are you saying that in countries where rape is allowed, you'll allow the game to be sold? It's legal there, so that's fine.
That is so typically Steam as well.
Well, here's the thing. It's so typical tech companies as a whole. Remember the stupid idea for having the what was the name of that car that's supposed to be underground that they were hyping? You know, was it Jeff Bezos who was talking about it or someone else?
Well, I'm pretty sure that it was one of Elon Musk's ideas.
Oh, it was Elon Musk, right. And he wanted to do the
lightning fast thing.
Yeah, and there's a term that engineers use called AMFM. And they say AMFM is actual mechanics and fucking magic. And the idea of having it was fucking magic because he didn't seem to realize some realities. For instance, if you want to turn a car 100 miles an hour on a curve, you have to have a curve that is more than 1 mile long. Mm-hmm. Or else the G's will kill the person inside. Now try and do that in Manhattan. Not to mention the space in which you'd have to have the exits and all that stuff. So, you know, they have all these ideas, but it's like in a fantasy world where, you know, if we can think of it, we can implement it and that'll be it, you know, and they don't seem to understand the real world applications. And that's what's going on here with Valve. You know, they think, and we're going to get back to, you know, curation. They think computers can do all the work for them. You know, we'll just have computers, you know, search for these for certain keywords and all that stuff. And they don't seem to understand that what we actually need is actual curation by human eyes, you know. And if you had human eyes checking out what games are being put on Steam, A, you'd have all the asset flip games gone. You know, that's number one. But number two, you wouldn't have a game called Rape Day on your service. Someone would look at that and say, yeah, no.
Well, that and the idiocy to fucking double down at first until people finally tell you enough, don't do that, you idiot.
But here's the thing. Let's ignore the doubling down for a moment. Valve wouldn't have known unless people brought it up. Did you notice there's a game here called Rape Day, which allows people to sexually assault people? And it's not cautionary, because here's the thing. You can have rape in a game, you know. You can have rape in a movie, you know. It is something, you know. But it is such a delicate subject that you have to give context for it.
Yeah,
we're just gonna, you know.
I saw the screenshots, and this looked like the shallow end of the shallowest pool that you could possibly find, and it was just a ridiculous pretense to say, oh, well, I just want a game that I can rape people. It's ridiculous, and I'm surprised. Actually, I guess I'm not surprised, because the developer is anonymous, or they didn't give their identity of who they were.
I thought one of the guys was not anonymous because they wrote a post about it.
Okay.
What was it? I don't know. I'm not even gonna bother looking it up.
Right.
But you know, I mean, look how long it took for Valve to react to a game in which there was an option to kill gays, and I'm not going to use the slur that was included with it. You know, it's like, oh, that's in there. I mean, there's no curation at all.
Yeah.
ESRB does better a job of curation. Well, mostly because ESRB demands that you send them all of your assets. You know, they have to look at all the assets. You know, there can't be anything hidden. Why can't Valve do the same thing?
I'm sure Valve has enough money to hire, you know, enough workers.
Well, they have enough money, but they don't want to spend it because, you know, they want to make a profit for themselves. You know, they want to make $10 billion and not you know, $9 billion. Because, you know, they need the extra yachts. Now with the tax credit they get for purchasing yachts. So, yeah, It's here's the thing. People made a brouhaha about games like Hatred or Postal and all that stuff. You know, they did have a point, you know, but it was just, you know, that was just murdering anonymous pixels on a screen. You know, it was just blind. You know, this is actually, you know, whack off material for certain people.
Yeah. And like Anna Bardell said, like, it's, if you don't curate your stuff, if you don't take responsibility, if you don't get ahead of this and ask for and start asking and start like checking yourself instead of asking for forgiveness later, then you're inviting stupid ass people, politicians, to look at this stuff and come up with stupid ass laws that will infringe on anyone's right to do anything with video games.
Well, here's the thing, you know, at some point they're going to have to step in. I mean, here's the thing. You know, there are a lot of right-wing nationalists who are not allowed on Twitter in other countries. You know, I mean, at some point, you know, Scotland may say, you know what, Val, we're going to, you know, you can't sell anything here until you let us, what's it called, moderate what you do. You know, we're going to have to start checking out what you do. I mean, Australia just finally got an R rate, you know, their version of an R rating for games, and, you know, That country still sometimes behaves like the nanny state and doesn't and bans games, even though, hey, look, we got an R rating, we're adults, you know.
That's a dumb thing about Valve, is that they have the money to have that curation, and they don't, and it's going to invite that garbage into it. Like, it doesn't have to be that way. They pretty much are saying we don't care enough to stop it from happening.
Well, here's the thing. They have the ego to think, well, no one's going to do anything. They better find out. You know, governments can do things really damn fast. If they piss off various governments, they can find out, you know what? What's it called? Here's the thing that frightens me right now. I don't know if you read this article, but China is now on the lead for doing 5G. And upgrading their internet service, while the United States is, even though they invented it, the internet, and even though, you know, they proliferated it, they're way behind technologically, you know. And the thing is that other countries can just, you know, eat your lunch, you know, when it comes to this, you know. Valve had better wake up, because they're going to find themselves on the wrong end of some people, and they might find themselves forcibly out of business.
Epic knows how to curate their shit, and they're certainly doing a good job of getting in there and getting exclusives and swiping them right out from under Steam's nose. It's going to continue to happen, especially if they keep effing up like that.
Well, that's just because, you know, Epic just has, you know, enough games that you can see on one piece of paper, you know.
Yeah, but at the same time, if this continues to happen, people are going to continue to lose faith in Steam and go and look elsewhere.
I wonder if Epic would be cheeky enough to say, well, we don't have games about rape on our service.
I've already looking at Good Old Games, so there's two right there, Epic Games and Good Old Games. So, yeah, Steam does have competition.
Well, there's also Gamersgate and also Green Man Gaming. I mean, there's a lot of you know, services that are out there.
Discord's doing their thing now.
That's
and
right.
And these are all places that give better cuts.
Well, see, here's the thing about Discord, though. They're more about technological stuff. Like, they're selling games that it's going to be work really well with their headsets, you know.
Right, but at the same time, there's still all these new platforms that are giving a better cut to the developer themselves.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing, you know. You also, let's not forget, there's also the Windows 10 store. I mean, Microsoft has their store as well, and I've actually bought games from it myself. Mostly small games like Fallout Shelter and But, you know, hey, if I wanted to, I could download Shadows of War on it because I already own it on the digitally on the Xbox. I don't know. Like I said, here's the frustrating thing isn't that this is going on. It's just that this is not new. This is not new at all. I mean, from the moment Steam Greenlight was announced, I mean, they've been terrible at curation. Even before that, but Steam Greenlight just opened up a world of shit with them. And, you know, Steam Greenlight was a good idea. They just fumbled it really badly.
Yeah, I agree.
I am doing a podcast. I cannot talk.
I mean, like, what's it going to take for Steam to actually figure out they're slowly burying themselves in the ground?
I don't know. There's a word called too big to fail, but – and then again, Enron was too big to fail. I don't know. It's just that, you know
– even Mighty Blockbuster fell in the end. Something can take down Steam if they're not careful.
Here's the thing, though, you know, I just hate the fact that there's too many entitled white male gamers who are going to defend this shit and defend Valve and defend Rape Day. And it's like – it just makes me sick. Usually they're – not the kind of person I would ever associate with.
They can defend it all they want, but if they're also catering to it, then they have nothing to blame but themselves.
Yeah, yeah. Anyways, let's move on to the next item, which is a lot less depressing. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. Rainbow Six Siege next operator will be invisible to cameras, leak suggests. This is from PC Gamer. The next season of Rainbow Six Siege will add two new operators, one Danish, one from the United States Secret Service. We don't know much about them yet, but a new leak from a seemingly reputable source might have revealed some of their abilities. According to the leak, first posted on Resetera, the Danish attacker will be invisible to cameras and will have a sort of silent step similar to Cav, a reference to Cavalier's ability to make her movements near silent for a period of time. The U.S. Defender, meanwhile, will have a special eyesight that bypasses flashes and smokes. Well, that's a good thing. Nothing has been confirmed, but the information comes from Resetera user Pomora, who last year correctly predicted the names and gadgets of two Australian operators added to the games this week, Mozzie and Gridlock. Based on the conversation with an industry friend, she doesn't say where she got the intel this time around. The description of the Danish operator certainly fits with hints from Ubisoft. In a tease last month, the developer revealed the attacker would be an expert in covert reconnaissance and stealth tactics. The first season of Year 4, called Operation Burnt Horizon, is now live.
You know, that title makes me think of someone smoking weed.
Yeah, it sounds like it should be exactly that, but like a Far Cry DLC.
So anyways, Scott, TJ, you would know more than anybody how much of a thing, you know, being able to be invisible to cameras will be in that game.
Yeah.
Well, definitely. Both and the being immune to flashes and smoke would be great, because I remember one game player I watched constantly had his teammates flowing flashes in his face, and he wouldn't be able to see things. So being immune to it would actually be really helpful, because not only would you be immune to it from other people, but you could use it to your advantage to throw it and keep going and not even have to wait for the flash to go away. You could just go right there.
Yeah. Even then, flashbangs and smoke grenades are such a huge part of Rainbow Six Siege, both offensively and defensively, that having that stuff right from the get-go and being able to have somebody that can just sort of power their way through that particular situation is pretty great. Oh, and also, yeah, that camera thing. Cameras are everything in Rainbow Six Siege. It's the communication of information across your team, like being able to ping an enemy, let your team know that there's somebody coming from any given direction before they, or like even finding out that they've shot out the camera tells you where they are. But if the camera never sees them to begin with, then why do they have to shoot out the camera? They don't. That's an impressive idea.
That makes
it
me wonder what
like
gonna,
a cheat.
I wonder what they're going to do. I wonder what's going to be their weakness. I mean, are they going to have less armor? You know, that sort of thing. Because basically, you're giving someone the ultimate stealth ability, and you can't even flush them out with flashbangs, you know?
Maybe, I mean, I imagine that it would be something like they make a sound before they activate. Their equipment makes a specific sound when it activates that will inform anyone nearby that they are stealthing through cameras.
Yeah. A high-pitched one, you can hear it from, like, a couple of feet away.
Mm-hmm. Either that, or maybe there's some like artifacting that you see, like some a little bit of static,
like Predator. You see this? You can see a blob on the screen.
Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of ways they could go with that, and I believe in Ubisoft. I believe in Montpellier to handle that pretty well.
So yeah, it's too bad you're not playing Siege that much anymore. You're stuck with League of Legends.
I got myself a dang old new PC. I might go back and see what it's like.
Wait, now here's a question. Have you been playing with the other operators? Have you played with Mozzie at Gridlock?
No, I haven't gone back to Rainbow Six Siege since they did the Brazilian operatives.
Have you at least seen them in action?
Yes, I have seen them in action, but I haven't been able to play them myself for a while.
So what are they like?
What, the
Mozzie and Gridlock?
I mean, everyone that comes to the Ubisoft game is like they bring something cool that like I think they're not my favorite ones. I still think that my favorite ones were probably the Japanese operatives that could one of them could basically put a ball bearing thing on the wall that would.
Yeah, but here's a question. Is her hitbox massive? It's like, is she easy to hit because she's just huge?
Yeah, but there's other ones that are like worse. I wouldn't say that that's any worse for her than it is for someone like the shield operatives.
Yeah, but the shield operatives just have these things in front of them. It's supposed to present a huge target because you're not going to injure them.
And that's something to consider, like. The size of your hitbox is a factor, but like if you have an ability that you can use to get past that weakness, then it's well worth it.
All I know is she has a big ass shotgun.
Yeah, you best not miss, or she's gonna maul you.
what's it called? Is she part grizzly? Is that why she's so big? Anyways. Look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with the nursery news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback. So leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. I am at Jonah Falcon on Twitter.
I'm at Johnny Chug.
I'm at Alpha Shard.
And we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.